peace negotiations were not going well.
"You attacked us," said Vorbis.
"I would call it a preemptive defence," said the tyrant. "We saw what happened to Istanzia and Betrek and Ushistan."
"They saw the truth of Om."
"Yes," said the tyrant. "We believe they did. Eventually.
And they are now proud members of the Empire."
"Yes," said the tyrant. "We believe they are, but we like to remember them as they were before you sent them your letters that put the minds of men in chains."
"That set the feet of men on the right road," said Vorbis.
"Chain letters," said the tyrant. "The chain letter to the Ephebians. Forget your gods, be subjugated, learn to fear, do not break the chain. The last people who did woke up one morning to find 50,000 armed men on their lawn."
Vorbis sat back.
"What is it you fear?" he said, "here in your desert with your gods? Is it not that deep in your souls you know that your gods are as shifting as your sand?"
"Oh, yes," said the tyrant. "We know that. That's always been a point in their favour. We know about sand, and your god is a rock. And we know about rock."
Om stumped along a cobbled alley, keeping to the shade as much as possible. There seemed to be a lot of courtyards. He paused at the point where the alley opened into yet another of them. There were voices. Mainly, there was one voice, petulant and reedy. This was the philosopher Didactylos. Although one of the most quoted and popular philosophers of all time, Didactylos the Ephebian never achieved the respect of his fellow philosophers. They felt he wasn't philosopher material. He didn't bath often enough. Or, to put it another way, at all. And he philosophized about the wrong sort of things. And he was interested in the wrong sorts of things. Dangerous things. Other philosophers asked questions like, is truth beauty, and is beauty truth? And is reality created by the observer? But Didactylos posed the famous philosophical conundrum, yes, but what's it really all about then, when you get right down to it? I mean, really. His philosophy was a mixture of three famous schools, the Cynics, the Stoics, and the Epicureans, and summed up all three of them in his famous phrase, "You can't trust any bugger further than you can throw him, and there's nothing you can do about it, so let's have a drink. Mine's a double if you're buying, thank you. And a packet of nuts. Her left bosom is nearly uncovered, eh? Two more packets, then." Many people have quoted from his famous meditations. "It's a rum old world, all right, but you've got to laugh, haven't you? Nil illegitimo carborundum, is what I say. The experts don't know everything. Still, where would we be if we were all the same?" Om crawled closer to the voice, bringing himself around the corner of the wall so that he could see into a small courtyard. There was a very large barrel against the far wall. Various debris around it, broken wine amphora, gnawed bones, and a couple of lean-to shacks made out of rough boards, suggested it was someone's home. And this impression was given some weight by the sign chalked on a board and stuck on the wall over the barrel. It read, "Didactylos and Nephew. Practical philosophers. No proposition too large. We can do your thinking for you. Special rates after 6 p.m. Fresh axioms every day." In front of the barrel, a short man in a toga that must once have been white, in the same way that once all continents must have been joined together, was kicking another one who was on the ground.
"You lazy bugger!"
The young one sat up.
"Honest, uncle. I turn my back for half an hour and you go to sleep on the job."
"What job? We haven't had anything since Mr. Piloxi, the farmer, last week."
"How do you know? How do you know? While you were snoring, dozens of people could have been going past, every one of them in need of a personal philosophy."
"And he only paid in olives?"
"I shall probably get a good price for them olives."
"They're rotten, uncle."
"Nonsense, you said they were green."
"Yes, but they're supposed to be black."
In the shadows, the tortoise's head turned back and forth like a spectator's at a tennis match. The young man stood up.
"Mrs. Bylaxis came in this morning," he said. "She said the proverb you did for her last week has stopped working."
Didactylos scratched his head.
"Which one was that?"
he said.
"You gave her 'It's always darkest before dawn.'"
"There's nothing wrong with that. Damn good philosophy."
"She said she didn't feel any better. Anyway, she said she'd stayed up all night because of her bad leg, and it was actually quite light just before dawn, so it wasn't true. And her leg still dropped off. So I gave her part exchange on 'Still, it does you good to laugh.'"
Didactylos brightened up a bit.
"Hehe, shifted that one, eh?
She said she'd give it a try. She gave me a whole dried squid for it. She said I looked like I needed feeding up."
"Right. You're learning. That's lunch sorted out at any rate. See, Ern? Told you it'd work if we stuck at it."
"I don't call one dried squid and a box of greasy olives much of a return, master. Not for 2 weeks thinking."
"We got 3 obols for doing that proverb for old Grillos the cobbler."
"No, we didn't. He brought it back. His wife didn't like the colour."
"And you gave him his money back?"
"Yes."
"What, all of it?"
"Yes."
"Oh, can't do that. Not after he's put wear and tear on the words. Which one was it?"
"It's a wise crow that knows which way the camel points."
"I put a lot of work into that one."
"He said he couldn't understand it."
"I don't understand cobbling, but I know a good pair of sandals when I wears them."
Om blinked his one eye. Then he looked at the shapes of the mines in front of him. The one called Ern was presumably the nephew, and had a fairly normal sort of mind, even if it did seem to have too many circles and angles in it. But Didactylos's mind bubbled and flashed like a pot full of electric eels on full boil. Om had never seen anything like it. Brother's thoughts took eons to slide into place. It was like watching mountains colliding. Didactylos's thoughts chased after one another with a whooshing noise. No wonder he was bald. Hair would have burned off from the inside. Om had found a thinker. A cheap one, too, by the sound of it. He looked up at the wall behind the barrel. Further along was an impressive set of marble steps leading up to some bronze doors, and over the doors, made of metal letters set in stone, was the word Librum. He'd spent too much time looking. Ern's hand clamped itself onto his shell, and he heard Didactylos's voice say,
"Hey, there's good eating on one of these things."
Brother cowered.
"You stoned our envoy," shouted Vorbis, "an unarmed man."
"He brought it on himself," said the tyrant. "Aristocrates was there. He will tell you."
The tall man nodded and stood up.
"By tradition, anyone may speak in the marketplace," he began.
"And be stoned?"
Vorbis demanded. Aristocrates held up a hand.
"Ah," he said, "anyone can say what they like in the square. We have another tradition, though, called free listening. Unfortunately, when people dislike what they hear, they can become a little testy."
"I was there too," said another adviser. "Your priest got up to speak, and at first everything was fine because people were laughing, and then he said that Om was the only real god, and everyone went quiet. And then he pushed over a statue of Tuvalpit, the god of wine, and that's when the trouble started."
"Are you proposing to tell me he was struck by lightning?" said Vorbis.
Vorbis was no longer shouting. His voice was level, without passion. The thought rose in Brother's mind, this is how the Exquisitors speak. When the Inquisitors have finished, the Exquisitors speak.
"No, by an amphora. Tuvalpit was in the crowd, you see."
"And striking honest men is considered proper godly behaviour, is it?" "Your missionary had said that people who did not believe in Om would suffer endless punishment. I have to tell you that the crowd considered this rude." "And so they threw stones at him?" "Not many. They only hurt his pride, and only after they'd run out of vegetables." "They threw vegetables?" "When they couldn't find any more eggs." "And when we came to remonstrate?"
"I'm sure 60 ships intended more than remonstrating,"
said the tyrant.
And we have warned you, Lord Vorbis. People find in Ephib what they seek. There will be more raids on your coast. We will harass your ships, unless you sign.
And passage through Ephib, said Vorbis. The tyrant smiled.
Across the desert. My lord, if you can cross the desert, I'm sure you can go anywhere.
The tyrant looked away from Vorbis and towards the sky, visible between the pillars.
And now I see it is nearing noon, he said, and the day heats up. Doubtless you will wish to discuss our proposals with your colleagues. May I suggest we meet again at sunset?
Vorbis appeared to give this some consideration.
I think, he said eventually, that our deliberations may take longer. Shall we say tomorrow morning?
The tyrant nodded.
As you wish. In the meantime, the palace is at your disposal. There are many fine temples and works of art, should you wish to inspect them. When you require meals, mention the fact to the nearest slave.
Slave is an Ephebian word. In Om we have no word for slave, said Vorbis.
So I understand, said the tyrant. I imagine that fish have no word for water.
He smiled the fleeting smile again.
And there are the baths and the library, of course. Many fine sights. You are our guests.
Vorbis inclined his head.
I pray, he said, that one day you will be a guest of mine.
And what sights I shall see, said the tyrant.
Brother stood up, knocking over his bench and going redder with embarrassment. He thought, they lied about Brother Murdoch. They beat him within an inch of his life, Vorbis said, and flogged him the rest of the way. And Brother Numrod said he saw the body and it was really true. Just for talking. People who would do that sort of thing deserve punishment. And they keep slaves. People forced to work against their will. People treated like animals. And they even call their ruler a tyrant. And why isn't any of this exactly what it seems? Why don't I believe any of it? Why do I know it isn't true? And what did he mean about fish not having a word for water? The Omnians were half escorted, half led back to their compound. Another bowl of fruit was waiting on the table in Brother's cell, with some more fish and a loaf of bread. There was also a man sweeping the floor.
Said Brother, are you a slave?
Yes, master.
That must be terrible.
The man leaned on his broom.
You're right. It's terrible, really terrible. Do you know, I only get one day off a week.
Brother, who had never heard the words day off before, and who was in any case unfamiliar with the concept, nodded uncertainly.
Why don't you run away?
He said.
Oh, done that, said the slave. Ran away to Tussaud once, didn't like it much. Came back. Ran away for a fortnight in De Jelly Baby every winter, though.
"Do you get brought back?" said Brother.
"Huh!" said the slave. No, I don't. Miserable skinflint aristocrates. I have to come back by myself, hitching lifts on ships, that kind of thing.
You come back?
Yeah. Abroad's all right to visit, but you wouldn't want to live there. Anyway, I've only got 4 years as a slave and then I'm free. You get the vote when you're free, and you get to keep slaves.
His face glazed with the effort of recollection as he ticked off points on his fingers.
Slaves get 3 meals a day, at least one with meat, and one free day a week, and 2 weeks being allowed to run away every year. And I don't do ovens or heavy lifting, and worldly-wise repartee only by arrangement.
Yes, but you're not free, said Brother, intrigued, despite himself.
What's the difference? You don't get any days off.
Brother scratched his head. And one less meal.
Really? I think I'll give freedom a miss then, thanks.
Have you seen a tortoise anywhere round here?
Said Brother.
No, and I cleaned under the bed.
Have you seen one anywhere else today?
You want one? There's good eating on it.
No, it's all right.
Brother!
It was Vorbis's voice. Brother hurried out into the courtyard and into Vorbis's cell.
Ah, brother.
Yes, lord? Vorbis was sitting cross-legged on the floor, staring at the wall.
You are a young man visiting a new place, said Vorbis. No doubt there is much you wish to see.
There is, said brother. Vorbis was using the exquisitor voice again, a level monotone, a voice like a strip of dull steel.
You may go where you wish. See new things, brother. Learn everything you can. You are my eyes and ears and my memory. Learn about this place.
Really, lord? Have I impressed you with my use of careless language, brother?
No, lord. Go away, fill yourself, and be back by sunset.
Even the library, said brother.
Ah, yes, the library. The library that they have here. Of course, crammed with useless and dangerous and evil knowledge. I can see it in my mind, brother. Can you imagine that?
No, Lord Vorbis.
Your innocence is your shield, brother. No, by all means go to the library. I have no fear of any effect on you.
Lord Vorbis?
Yes?
The tyrant said that they hardly did anything to Brother Murdoch. Silence unrolled its restless length. Vorbis said,
He lied.
Yes. Brother waited. Vorbis continued to stare at the wall. Brother wondered what he saw there. When nothing else appeared to be forthcoming, he said, Thank you. He stepped back a bit before he went out so that he could squint under the deacon's bed. He's probably in trouble, brother thought as he hurried through the palace. Everyone wants to eat tortoises. He tried to look everywhere while avoiding the friezes of unclad nymphs. Brother was technically aware that women were a different shape from men. He hadn't left the village until he was 12, by which time some of his contemporaries were already married. And Omnianism encouraged early marriage as a preventative against sin, although any activity involving any part of the human anatomy between neck and knees was more or less sinful in any case. Brother wished he was a better scholar so he could ask his god why this was. Then he found himself wishing his god was a more intelligent god so it could answer. He hasn't screamed for me, he thought. I'm sure I would have heard. So maybe no one's cooking him. A slave polishing one of the statues directed him to the library. Brother pounded down an aisle of pillars. When he reached the courtyard in front of the library, it was crowded with philosophers, all craning to look at something. Brother could hear the usual petulant squabbling that showed that philosophical discourse was underway. In this case,
I've got 10 obols here, says it can't do it again.
Talking money! That's something you don't hear every day, Zeno.
Yeah, and it's about to say goodbye.
Look, don't be stupid, it's a tortoise, it's just doing a mating dance.
There was a breathless pause, then a sort of collective sigh.
There. That's never a right angle.
Come on, I'd like to see you do better in the circumstances.
What's it doing now? The hypotenuse, I think.
Call that a hypotenuse? It's wiggly.
It's not wiggly. It's drawing it straight and you're looking at it in a wiggly way.
I'll bet 30 obols. It can't do a square. Here's 40 obols says it can.
There was another pause and then a cheer.
Yay! That's more of a parallelogram, if you ask me, said a petulant voice. Listen, I know a square when I see one, and that's a square. All right, double or nothing, then. Bet it can't do a dodecagon.
Eh? You bet it couldn't do a septagon just now.
Double or nothing. Dodecagon. Worried, eh? Ho-ho-ho, feeling a bit avis domestica. Cluck, cluck, cluck.
It's a shame to take your money.
There was another pause.
10 sides. 10 sides? Ha!
Told you it wasn't any good. Whoever heard of a tortoise doing geometry?
Another daft idea, Didacolos. They said so all along. It was just a tortoise.
There's good eating on one of those.
The mass of philosophers broke up, pushing past Brother without paying him much attention. He caught a glimpse of a circle of damp sand covered with geometrical figures. Om was sitting in the middle of them. Behind him was a very grubby pair of philosophers counting out a pile of coins.
How did we do, Urn? Said Didactylos.
We're 52 obols up, master.
See?
Every day things improve. Pity it didn't know the difference between 10 and 12, though. Cut one of its legs off and we'll have a stew.
Cut off a leg?
Well, a tortoise like that, you don't eat it all at once.
Didactylos turned his face towards a plump young man with splayed feet and a red face, who was staring at the tortoise.
Yes, he said.
The tortoise does know the difference between 10 and 12, said the fat boy.
Damn thing just lost me 80 obols, said Didactylos.
Yes, but tomorrow, the boy began, his eyes glazing as if he was carefully repeating something he'd just heard, tomorrow you should be able to get odds of at least 3 to 1.
Didactylos' mouth dropped open.
Give me the tortoise, Urn, he said.
The apprentice philosopher reached down and picked up Om very carefully.
You know, I thought right at the start there was something funny about this creature, said Didactylos. I said to Urn, there's tomorrow's dinner, and then he says, no, no, it's dragging its tail in the sand and doing geometry. That doesn't come natural to a tortoise, geometry.
Om's eye turned to Brother.
I had to, he said. It was the only way to get his attention. Now I've got him by the curiosity. When you've got him by the curiosity, their hearts and minds will follow.
He's a god, said Brother.
Really? What's his name?
Said the philosopher.
Don't tell him. Don't tell him. The local gods will hear.
Oh, I don't know, said Brother.
Didactylos turned Om over.
The turtle moves,
said Urn thoughtfully.
What?
Said Brother.
Master did a book,
said Urn.
That's not really a book, said Didactylos modestly. More a scroll. Just a little thing I knocked off.
Saying that the world is flat and goes through space on the back of a giant turtle,
said Brother.
Oh, have you read it?
Didactylos' gaze was unmoving.
Are you a slave?
No, said Brother. Don't mention my name. Call yourself a scribe or something.
Scribe, said Brother, weakly.
Yeah, said Urn. I can see that. The telltale callus on the thumb where you hold the pen. The ink stains all over your sleeves.
Brother glanced at his left thumb.
I haven't got...
Yeah, said Urn, grinning. Use your left hand, do you?
I use both, said Brother, but not very well, everyone says.
Ah, said Didactylos. Ambisinister.
What?
He means incompetent with both hands, said Om.
Oh, yes, that's me.
Brother coughed politely.
Look, I'm looking for a philosopher. One that knows about gods.
He waited. Then he said...
You aren't going to say they're a relic of an outmoded belief system.
Didactylos, still running his fingers over Om's shell, shook his head.
No, I like my thunderstorms a long way off. Oh, could you stop turning him over and over? He's just told me he doesn't like it.
You can tell how old they are by cutting them in half and counting the rings, said Didactylos.
Oh, he hasn't got much of a sense of humour either.
You're Omnian, by the sound of it.
Yes. Here to talk about the treaty. I do the listening.
And what do you want to know about gods?
Brother appeared to be listening. Eventually he said,
How they start, how they grow, and what happens to them afterwards.
Didactylos put the tortoise into Brother's hands.
Costs money, that kind of thinking,
he said.
Let me know when we've used more than 52 obols worth,
said Brother. Didactylos grinned.
Looks like you can think for yourself, he said. Got a good memory?
No, not exactly a good one.
Right. Come on into the library. It's got an earthed copper roof, you know. Gods really hate that sort of thing.
Didactylos reached down beside him and picked up a rusty iron lantern. Brother looked up at the big white building.
That's the library?
He said.
Yes, said Didactylos. That's why it's got Librem carved over the door in such big letters. But a scribe like you would know that, of course.
The library of Ithebe was, before it burned down, the second biggest on the disk. Not as big as the library in Unseen University, of course, but that library had one or two advantages on account of its magical nature. No other library anywhere, for example, has a whole gallery of unwritten books. Books that would have been written if the author hadn't been eaten by an alligator around chapter one and so on. Atlases of imaginary places. Dictionaries of illusory words. Spotter's guides to invisible things. Wild thesauri in the lost reading room. A library so big that it distorts reality and has opened gateways to all other libraries, everywhere and everywhen. And so unlike the library at Ephebe, with its 400 or 500 volumes. Many of them were scrolls, to save their readers the fatigue of having to call a slave every time they wanted a page turned. Each one lay in its own pigeonhole, though. Books shouldn't be kept too close together, otherwise they interact in strange and unforeseeable ways. Sunbeams lanced through the shadows, as palpable as pillars in the dusty air. Although it was the least of the wonders in the library, Brother couldn't help noticing a strange construction in the aisles. Wooden lathes had been fixed between the rows of stone shelves about 2 metres from the floor, so that they supported a wider plank of no apparent use whatsoever. Its underside had been decorated with rough wooden shapes. "The library," announced Didactylos. He reached up. His fingers gently brushed the plank over his head. It dawned on Brother. "You're blind, aren't you?" he said.
"That's right."
"But you carry a lantern?"
"That's all right," said Didactylos. "I don't put any oil in it."
"A lantern that doesn't shine for a man that doesn't see?"
"Yeah, works perfectly. And, of course, it's very philosophical."
"And you live in a barrel?"
"Very fashionable living in a barrel,"
said Didactylos, walking forward briskly, his fingers only occasionally touching the raised patterns on the plank.
"Most of the philosophers do it. It shows contempt and disdain for worldly things. Mind you, Legibus has got a sauna in his. It's amazing the kind of things you can think of in it," he says.
Brother looked around. Scrolls protruded from their racks like cuckoos piping the hour.
"It's also... I never met a philosopher before I came here," he said. "Last night they were all..." "You got to remember there's 3 basic approaches to philosophy in these parts," said Didactylos. "Tell him, Urn." "There's the Zenoists," said Urn promptly. "They say the world is basically complex and random. And there's the Ebedians. They say the world is basically simple and follows certain fundamental rules."
"And there's me," said Didactylos, pulling a scroll out of its rack.
"Master says basically it's a funny old world," said Urn.
"And it doesn't contain enough to drink," said Didactylos.
"And doesn't contain enough to drink,"